Part 2. The Emperor. Chapter 5. Momem. The difference between the strong emperor and the weak is simply this. The former makes the world his arena, while the latter makes it his harem. Cocytus, The Annals of Cannae. What the men of the Tusk never understood was that the Nansur and the Kianine were old enemies. When two civilized peoples find themselves at war for centuries, any number of common interests will arise in the midst of their greater antagonism. Ancestral foes share many things: mutual respect, a common history, triumph in stalemate, and a plethora of unspoken truces. The men of the Tusk were interlopers, an impertinent flood that threatened to wash away the observed channels of a far older enmity. Drusus Acamian, Compendium of the First Holy War. Early summer, 4110, year of the Tusk, Momem. Designed to capture the setting sun, the imperial audience hall possessed no walls behind the emperor's raised dais. Sunlight streamed into the vaulted interior, shining across the marmoreal pillars of the concourse and gilding the tapestries suspended between them. A breeze tousled the smoke from censers arrayed about the dais, mingling the scent of fragrant oils with that of sky and sea.
"Any word of my nephew?" Icuri Zarius III asked Scaeus, his prime counsel. "Anything from Confus?"
"No, god of men," the old man replied. "But all is well, I'm certain of it."
Zarius pursed his lips, doing his best to appear serene.
"You may proceed, Scaeus."
With a swish of his silken robes, the wizened council turned to the other functionaries assembled about the dais. For as long as Zarius could remember, he'd always been surrounded by soldiers, ambassadors, slaves, spies, and astrologers. For as long as he could remember, he'd been the center of this scuttling herd, the peg from which the tattered mantle of empire hung. Now it suddenly struck him that he'd never looked into any of their eyes, not once. Matching the emperor's gaze was forbidden to those without imperial blood. The thought horrified him.
"Save for Scaeus, I know none of these people."
The prime council addressed them.
"This will be unlike any audience you've ever attended. As you know, the first of the great Enrithi lords has arrived. We are the portal through which he and his peers must pass before joining the Holy War. We cannot bar or tax their passage, but we can influence them, make them see that our interests coincide with what is right and what is true. As the audience proceeds, be silent. Do not fidget, do not move. Cultivate a look of stern compassion. If the fool signs the indenture, then and only then will we dispense with protocol. You may mingle with his entourage, share in whatever food or drink the slaves offer, but ration your words. Reveal nothing. Nothing. You may think you stand outside the circle of these events, but you do not. You are the circle. Make no mistake, my friends, the empire itself lies in the balance."
The prime council looked to Zarius, who nodded.
"The time has come,"
Scaeus called, gesturing to the far side of the imperial audience hall. Great stone doors, Kyranian relics salvaged from the ruins of Metsonk, ponderously opened.
"His Eminence," a voice cried. "Lord Nerse Kalmamunas, Palatine of Kanampuria."
Feeling curiously short of breath, Zarius watched his imperial ushers lead the Conryan entourage down the concourse. Despite his earlier resolution to remain motionless, men who resembled statues he was convinced exhibited wisdom. He found himself tugging at the tassels of his linen kilt. He had received innumerable petitioners in his 45 years, embassies of war and peace from across the three seas, but as Scaeus had said, he had never hosted an audience such as this. The Empire itself. Months had passed since Mathanet had declared holy war against the heathens of Qiyan. Like Naphtha, the fiend's summons had ignited the hearts of men in every Inrithi nation, pious, bloodthirsty, and covetous alike. Even now the groves and vineyards beyond Momem's walls hosted thousands of these so-called men of the Tusk. But until Kalmamunis's arrival, they had consisted almost entirely of rabble, low-caste freemen, beggars, non-hereditary cultic priests, and even, Zarius had been told, a band of lepers, men with little hope outside of Mathanet's promise, and even less understanding of the dreadful task their Shrya had set for them. Such men did not merit an emperor's spit, let alone his concern. Nerse Kalmamunis, however, was a far different matter. Of all the great Inrithi nobles rumored to have mortgaged their birthrights for the Holy War, he was the first to reach the Empire's shores. His arrival had thrown Momem's populace into an uproar. Clay blessing tablets, purchased from the temples at a copper talent apiece, had been strung across the streets. The fire altars of Kamiral had burned an unending procession of victims donated in his name. Everyone understood that men such as Kalmamunis, along with their client barons and knights, would be the keel and rudder of the holy war. But who would be its pilot? Me. Stung by a momentary panic, Zarius looked from the approaching Conryans to the flutter of wings above. As always, sparrows wheeled and jousted beneath the dim vaults. As always, they calmed him. For a moment, he wondered what an emperor was to a sparrow. Just another man? He thought it unlikely. When he lowered his gaze, the Conryans were kneeling across the floor below him. Several of them, Zarius noticed with distaste, had tiny flower petals lodged in their hair and the oiled ringlets of their beards, marks of Momem's adulation. They stood in unison, some blinking, others shielding their eyes against the sunlight. For them, I'm darkness framed by sun and sky.
It is always good, he said with surprising decisiveness, to receive a cousin of our race from across the seas. How are things, Lord Kalmamunis?
The Palatine of Kanampuria stepped from his entourage and paused beneath the monumental steps, thoughtlessly choosing Zarius's long shadow to block the glare. Tall and broad of shoulder, the man cut an imposing figure. The small mouth, pursed in his beard, suggested some defect of breeding, but the rose and blue finery he wore was worth even an emperor's envy. The Conryans might look brutish with their beards, especially amid the clean-shaven elegance of the imperial Nansur court, but their dress was impeccable.
Good! How goes the war, uncle?
Zarius nearly bolted from his seat. Someone gasped.
He means no offense, Scott of Men,
Skaeus quickly murmured in his ear.
Conryan nobles often refer to their betters as uncle. It is their custom.
Yes,
Zarius thought. But why does he mention the war? Does he bait me?
What war do you refer to? The Holy War?
Kalmamunis looked narrowly at what must have been a wall of silhouettes above him.
I was told your nephew, Icuri Confus, marches against the Skilvendi in the north.
Oh, that isn't a war. Simply a punitive expedition. A mere raid, in fact, if one compares it with the great war to come. The Skilvendi are nothing. It is the Fainim of Qiyan who are the sole object of my concern. After all, it is they, and not the Skilvendi, who desecrate holy Shima.
Could they hear the hollow in his belly?
Kalmamunis frowned.
But I've heard that the Skilvendi are a formidable people, that they've never been overcome in the field.
You've been misled.
So, tell me, Lord Palatine, your journey from Conryia was without incident, I presume? None to speak of. Momus favored us with kind seas.
By his grace do we travel.
Tell me, did you have occasion to confer with Proyas before you left Aeoknissus?
He could fairly hear Skaeus stiffen beside him. Not 3 hours earlier, the Prime Council had informed him of Kalmamunis's feud with his illustrious kinsman. According to their sources in Conraya, Proyas had ordered Calmamunis whipped for impiety at the Battle of Peremptai the previous year.
Proyas?
Zarius smiled.
Yes, your cousin, the Crown Prince.
The small-mouthed face darkened.
No, we did not confer.
But I thought Mathanet had charged him with marshalling all of Conraya for the Holy War.
You were misled.
Zarius stifled a laugh. The man was stupid, he realized. He often wondered whether this was not the true function of Jinan, the quick separation of wheat from chaff. The Palatine of Kanampuria, he now knew, was chaff.
No, Zarius said. I think not.
Several members of the Calmamunis entourage scowled at this. The stocky officer to his right even opened his mouth in protest, but they held their tongues. They knew better, Zarius supposed, than to suggest their Palatine had actually missed something.
Proyas and I do not...
Calmamunis paused, as though realizing mid-sentence that he had said too much. The small mouth gaped, baffled.
Oh, this one is art, a real fool's fool.
Zarius waved a dismissive hand and watched its shadow flutter across the Palatine's men. The sun felt warm across his fingers.
But enough of Proyas. Indeed,
Calmamunis snapped. Afterwards, Zarius had no doubt, Scaeus would find some slavish way to chastise him for mentioning Proyas. The fact that the Palatine had offended him first would count for nothing. As far as Scaeus was concerned, they were here to seduce, not to fence. The old ingrate, Zarius was convinced, was becoming as bad as his mother. No matter. He was emperor.
The provisions, Scaeus whispered.
You and your contingent will be provisioned, of course, Zarius continued. And to ensure you're kept in a manner befitting your rank, I've appropriated a nearby villa for your comfort. He turned to the Prime Council. Scaeus, will you please show the Palatine our indenture?
Scaeus snapped his fingers, and an immense eunuch plodded from drapery to the far right of the dais, bearing a bronze lectern. A second followed, a long parchment scroll resting like a relic in his walrus arms. Calmamunis backed in astonishment from the steps as the first eunuch placed the stand before him. The second fumbled with the scroll for a moment, an indiscretion that would not go unpunished, then smoothly unrolled it across the sloped bronze. Both withdrew to a discreet distance. The Conraian Palatine squinted quizzically at Zarius, then bent to study the heavy document. Several moments passed. Finally, Zarius asked,
Do you read, Sheikh?
Calmamunis glared at him.
I need to be more careful, Zarius realized.
Few things were as incalculable as men who were at once stupid and thin-skinned.
I read, Sheikh, but I don't understand.
That will not do, Zarius said, leaning forward on his bench.
You are the first man of true rank, Lord Calmamunis, to grace the gathering holy war. It's crucial we understand each other implicitly, no?
Indeed, the Palatine replied, his tone and expression frigid in the manner of someone trying to maintain dignity in the midst of bewilderment.
Zarius smiled.
Good. The Nansor Empire, as you well know, has warred against the Fainim since the first Kiani tribesmen rode howling from the deserts. For generations we've battled them in the south, even as we've battled the Skilvendi in the north, losing province after province to their fanatic ardor. Yumana, Zarash, even Shigek, losses purchased by the sacrifice of 1,000,000 Nansur sons. All of what is now called Kian once belonged to my imperial ancestors, Palatine. Since who I am now, I, Curie Zarius III, is but the face of one divine emperor. All of what is now called Kian once belonged to me.
Zarius paused, moved by his words and thrilled by the resonance of his voice across the distances of polished marble. How could they deny the force of his oratory?
The indenture before you, Lord Calamamunus, merely binds you, as all men must be bound, to the truth. And the truth, the undeniable truth, is that all the governorates of Kian are in fact provinces of the Nansur Empire. By marking this indenture, you swear to undo an ancient wrong. You swear to return all lands liberated by the Holy War to their rightful possessor.
What's this?
Calmamunus asked. He almost trembled with suspicion. Not good.
As I said, it's an indenture whereby you swear to—
I heard you the first time,
Calmamunus barked.
I was told nothing of this. This is sanctioned by the Shrier? Has Mathanet commanded this?
The feeble-minded fool had the gall to interrupt him? Icuri Zorias III, the emperor who would see the Nansorium restored? Outrage!
My generals tell me that you've brought some 15,000 men with you, Palatine. Surely you don't expect me to host and suckle so many for nothing, do you?
The word suckle caught his fancy, and he couldn't resist adding,
The Empire is only so many teats, my Conryan friend.
I've heard nothing of this,
Calmamunus stammered.
I'm to swear that all heathen lands I conquer will be given away, given to you?
The stocky officer at his side could bear no more.
Sign nothing, Lord Palatine. The Shrier, I wager, has heard nothing of this either.
And who would you be? Zariah snapped. Cryjates Inamus,
the man said briskly.
Lord Marshal of Atrempus.
Atrempus. Scarce, please tell me why that name sounds so familiar.
Certainly, God of Men. Atrempus is the sister of Atyersus, the fortress that the School of Mandate leases to House Nersay. Lord Zinamus here is a close friend of Nersay Proyas.
The old council paused for the briefest of instants, no doubt to allow his emperor time to digest the significance of this.
His childhood sword trainer, if I'm not mistaken.
Of course. Proyas wouldn't be so foolish as to allow an imbecile, especially one as powerful as Calmamunus, to parley alone with the house Icuri. He had sent a wet nurse.
Ah, mother, he thought. The whole Three Seas knows our reputation. Lord Marshal, Zoraya said, you forget your place. Didn't my master of protocol instruct you to remain silent?
Zinamus laughed and ruefully shook his head. Turning to Calmamunus, he said, we were warned this might happen, my lord.
Warned what might happen, Marshal?
Zorias cried. This was beyond all tolerance.
That House Icuri would play games with what is holy. Games!
Calmamunus exclaimed, whirling to confront Zorias.
Games with the Holy War! I came to you with an open heart, Emperor, as one man of the Tusk to another, and you play games?
Funereal silence. The Emperor of Nansur had just been accused.
I have asked you—
Zorias stopped, struggling to purge the screech from his tone.
I've asked you, in all good courtesy, Palatine, whether you'll sign my indenture. Either you sign it, or you and your men starve. It is as simple as that.
Calmamunus had adopted the stance of one about to draw his weapon, and for a moment, Zorias grappled with a mad urge to flee, even though the man's weapons had been confiscated. The Palatine might be an idiot, but he was a frighteningly well-proportioned one. He looked as though he could leap the intervening steps 7 at a time.
So you would deny us provisions?
Calmamunus cried.
Starve man of the Tusk in order to twist the holy war to your ends?
Men of the Tusk. The phrase made Zorias want to spit. And yet this prattling fool spoke it as though it were the god's secret name. More dull fanaticism. Scaeus had warned him of this as well.
I speak only of what truth demands, Lord Palatine. If truth serves my ends, then it's because I serve the ends of truth.
The Emperor of Nansur could not resist a wicked smile. Whether your men starve or not is your decision, Lord Calmamunus. Your— Something warm and viscous struck his cheek. Stunned, he slapped at his face, then studied the muck on his fingers. A premonition of doom struck him, gouged his breast of all breath. What was this? Some kind of omen? He looked up at the bickering sparrows.
Gainkelty!
He shrieked. The captain of his Eothic guard hastened to his side, bearing the odor of balsam and leather.
Kill those birds,
Zorias hissed.
Now, god of men?
Rather than reply, he snatched Gainkelty's crimson cloak, which the man wore, according to Nansor custom, thrown forward over his left shoulder and hooked to his right hip. He used it to wipe the bird shit from his cheek and fingers. One of his birds had defiled him. What could it mean? He had risked everything, everything.
Archers!
Gainkelty cried to the upper galleries where the Eothic bowmen were hidden.
Kill the sparrows!
A short pause, then the twang of unseen bowstrings from above.
Die!
Zorias roared.
Treacherous ingrates!
Despite his wrath, he grinned at the sight of Cal Mamunas and his embassy scrambling to avoid the falling shafts. Arrows clattered to the floor throughout the Imperial Audience Hall. Most had missed their mark, but a few twirled to the ground like maple seeds, bearing small, battling shadows. Soon the concourse was littered with felled sparrows, some flopping like speared fish, others lifeless. The archers relented. Beating wings punctuated the silence. An impaled sparrow had plopped onto the steps midway between him and the Palatine of Canampuria. On a whim, Zorias pushed himself from his throne and trotted down the steps. He bent, scooped up the arrow and its thrashing message. He studied the bird for a moment, watched it convulse and shudder.
Was it you, little one?
Who bid you do this?
Who?
A mere bird would never dare offend an emperor. He looked up at Cal Mamunas and was seized by another whim, this one, far darker. Holding shaft and sparrow before him, he approached the dumbstruck Palatine.
Take this, Zorias said calmly, as a token of my esteem.
Words of mutual outrage were exchanged. Then Cal Mamunas, Zynemus and their escort stormed from the Imperial Audience Hall, leaving Zorias alone with his thundering heart. He scratched at the memory of birdshit upon his cheek. Squinting against the sun, he looked up to his throne, to the burnished silhouettes of his servants. He vaguely heard his grand seneschal, Ingaru, cry out for a basin of warm water. The emperor had to be cleansed.
What does it mean?
Zorias asked numbly.
Nothing, god of men,
Skaos replied.
We fully expected them to initially deny the indenture. Like all fruits, our plan requires time to mature.
Our plan, Skaos? You mean my plan?
He tried to stare down the insolent fool, but the sun confounded him.
I speak neither to you nor to the indenture, you old ass.
To accentuate his point, he kicked over the bronze lectern. The indenture swung like a pendulum in the air before skittering to the floor. Then he gestured to the skewered bird lying at his feet.
What does this mean?
A good fortune,
Arithmaeus, his favorite augur and astrologer, called out.
Among the lower castes, to be shat upon by a bird is the cause of great celebration.
Zorias wanted to laugh, but he could not.
But being shat upon is the only fortune they know, isn't it?
Nevertheless, there's great wisdom to this belief, god of men. Small misfortunes, such as this, they believe, portend good things. Some token blight must always accompany triumph to remind us of our frailty.
His cheek tingled, as though it too recognized the truth of the augur's words. It was an omen, and a good one at that. He could feel it.
Again the gods have touched me.
Suddenly revived, he climbed the steps, avidly listening as Arithmaeus expanded on the way this event coincided with his star, which had just entered the horizon of Anakae, the whore of fate, and now stood upon two fortuitous axes with the nail of heaven.
"An excellent conjunction," the portly augur exclaimed. "An excellent conjunction indeed."
Rather than resume his place on the high bench, Zarius strode past it, bidding Erythmaeus to accompany him. Trailing a small herd of functionaries, he walked between the great rose marble pillars that marked the missing wall and out onto the adjoining terrace. Like a vast fresco chalked in smoky colors, Momum spread out below him, stretching toward the setting sun. His palace, the Endymion Heights, occupied the seaward quarter of the city so that he could, if he wished, see Momum in her labyrinthine entirety simply by turning his head from side to side. The square turrets of the Eothic garrison to the north, the monumental promenades and structures of the temple complex of Chimeral directly west, and the congested bedlam of the harbor along the banks of the river Phaeus to the south. Still listening to Erythmaeus, he peered across the distant walls to where the groves and fields of the surrounding countryside were bleached by the belly of the sun. There, bunched and scattered across the landscape like mold on bread, he could see the tents and pavilions of the Holy War. Not many so far, but in a matter of months, Zarius knew, they could very well encircle the horizon.
"But the Holy War, Erythmaeus, does all this mean the Holy War will be mine?"
The imperial augur clasped his corpulent fingers and shook his jowls in affirmation.
"But the ways of fate are narrow, god of men. There's much we must do."
So intent was Zarius on his augur's diagnoses and prescriptions, which included detailed instructions for the slaughter of 10 bulls, that he initially failed to notice his mother's arrival. But there she was, a narrow shadow in his periphery, as unmistakable as death.
"Prepare the victims, then, Erythmaeus," he said peremptorily. "That's enough for now."
As the augur departed, Zarius glimpsed slaves bearing the basin of water that had been summoned earlier.
"Erythmaeus."
"Yes, god of men."
"My cheek. Should I wash it?"
The man waved his hands in a comical fashion.
"No, definitely not, god of men. It's crucial that you wait at least 3 days. Crucial."
Several other questions assailed him, but his mother had approached, followed by the waddling bulk of her eunuch. She moved with the willowy grace of a 15-year-old virgin, despite her 60 whorish years. With a whisk of blue muslin and silk, she turned her profile to him, studying the city as he had moments earlier. Sunlight flashed across the scales of her jade headdress.
"A sun," she said dryly, "hanging upon the words of a babbling, blubbery fool. How it warms a mother's heart."
He sensed something odd in her manner, something bottled. But then everyone had seemed peculiarly ill at ease in his presence of late. No doubt, Zarius supposed, because they had finally glimpsed the divinity that dwelt within him, now that the two great horns of his plan had been set in motion.
"These are trying times, mother, too perilous to ignore the future."
She turned and appraised him in a manner that was at once coquettish and masculine. The sun deepened her wrinkles and drew the shadow of her nose across her cheek. The old, Zarius had always thought, were ugly, both in flesh and spirit. Age forever transformed hope into resentment. What was virile and ambitious in young eyes became impotent and covetous in old.
"I find you offensive, mother, both in appearance and in manner."
His mother's beauty had been legendary once. While his father yet lived, she'd been the empire's most celebrated possession, Icuri Istria, the Empress of Nansur, whose dowry had been the burning of the imperial harem.
"I just watched your audience with Calmamunus," she said mildly. "A disaster, just as I told you, my godlike son."
Her smile riddled the cosmetics about her lips with small cracks. A longing to kiss those lips struck Zarius with bodily force.
"I suppose, mother."
"Then why do you persist in this nonsense?"
And now this latest bizarre turn, his mother arguing against sweet reason.
Nonsense, mother. The indenture will see the empire restored.
But if a fool such as Kalmamunus can't be gulled into signing it, what hope does your indenture have, hm? No, Zorias, you serve the empire best by serving the holy war.
Has Mathanet bewitched you as well, mother? How does one bewitch a witch?
Laughter. By offering to destroy her enemies? How else?
But the whole world is your enemy, mother, or am I mistaken?
The whole world is every man's enemy, Zorias. You do well to remember that.
In his periphery, he glimpsed a guardsman approach Scaeus and whisper something in his ear. Harmony, his augurs had told him, was musical. It demanded that one be attuned to the nuances of every circumstance. Zorias was a man who needed not to look at things to see them. He possessed a refined sense of suspicion. The old council nodded, then momentarily glanced at his emperor, his eyes troubled.
Do they plot? Is this treachery?
But he shrugged these thoughts away. They occurred far too frequently to be trusted. As though guessing the source of his distraction, Estrella turned to the old council.
What say you, Scaeus, hm? What say you of my son's infantile avarice?
Avarice? Zorias cried. Why did she provoke him like this? Infantile?
What else? You squander the gifts of the whore. First fate delivers you this Mathanet, and against my counsel you try to assassinate him. Why? Because you do not own him. Then she delivers you the holy war, a hammer with which to crush our ancestral foe, and because you do not own it, you seek to destroy it as well. These are the tantrums of a child, not the ploys of a cunning emperor.
Trust me, mother, I seek to procure, not destroy, the holy war. The foreign dogs will sign my indenture.
With your blood? Have you forgotten what happens when one weds empty bellies to fanatic hearts? These are warlike men, Zorias, men intoxicated by their faith, men who act in the face of indignity. Do you truly expect them to endure your extortion? You risk the empire, Zorias.
Risk the empire? No. To the northwest, few Nansur lived within sight of the mountains. Such was their fear of the Skilvendi. And to the south, all the old provinces, which had belonged to the Nansurium at the height of her power, lay in the thrall of heathen Kian. Now Fainum drums echoed across her old conquests, calling men to worship the false prophet, Fain. Now the fortress of Asgiliok, which the ancient Kyranians had raised to guard against Shygek, was again the frontier. He did not risk the empire, only the pretense of one. Empire was the prize, not the wager.
Fortunately, your son is not quite so doltish as that, mother. The men of the Tusk won't starve. They'll eat from my bowl, but one day at a time. I don't intend to deny them the provisions they need to live, only the provisions they need to march.
And what of Mathanet? What if he directs you to provision them?
In matters of holy war, an ancient constitution bound the emperor to the Shrya. Zorias was obligated to supply the holy war on pain of Shrya's censure.
Ah, but you see, mother, that he cannot do. He knows as well as we that these men of the Tusk are fools, that they think the god himself has ordained the overthrow of the heathen. If I provide Kalmamunus with everything he requests, he'd march in a fortnight, certain that he could destroy the Fainum with his paltry household alone. Mathanet will mime outrage, of course, but he'll secretly applaud what I do, knowing it'll purchase the holy war the time it needs to gather. Why else do you think he commanded it gather about Momim rather than Sumna? Aside from taxing my purse, he knew I would do this.
She paused, her eyes abruptly narrow and appraising. No soul as serpentine as hers could fail to appreciate the subtlety of such a move.
But does this mean that you play Mathanet, or that Mathanet plays you?
Over the previous months, Zorias had, he could now admit, underestimated this new Shrier, but he would not underestimate the fiend again, not in this. Mathanet, Zarius realized, understood that the Nansorium was doomed. For the past century and a half, those with knowledge or power in Nansur had awaited the catastrophe, the news that the Skilvendi tribes had united as of old and were rumbling toward the coasts. This had been how Kyrenius had fallen 2,000 years ago, and how the Canaan Empire had fallen more than 1,000 years after. And this would be how, Zarius was certain, the Nansurium would fall as well. But it was the prospect of this inevitability conjoined with Kian, a heathen nation that waxed even as Nansur waned, that truly terrified him. After the Skilvendi left, and they always left, who would stop the Kianine heathens from snuffing out the muddied blood of Kyrenius, from cutting out the three hearts of God, Sumna, the thousand temples, and the tusk? Yes, this Shrier was shrewd. Zarius no longer regretted the failure of his assassins. Mathanet had given him a hammer like no other. A holy war.
"Our new Shrier," he said, "is much overrated.
Let him think he plays me."
"But for what purpose, Zarius? Even if the great among the holy war succumb to your demands, you don't truly think they'll spill their blood to hoist the imperial sun, do you? Even signed, your indenture is worthless."
"Not worthless, mother. Even if they break their oath, the indenture is not worthless."
"Then why, Zarius? Why all these mad risks?
Come, mother, have you grown so old?" For a moment, he suffered an uncommon glimpse of how things must appear to her, the mercantile and therefore extraordinary demand that every high noble of the Holy War sign his indenture, the dispatch of the greatest Nansur army assembled in a generation not against the heathens of Kian, but against their far more ancient and temperamental foe, the Skilvendi. How these two things alone must have taxed her. With plans as sublime as his, the logic was always hidden. Zarius was not fool enough to think he was the equal of his ancestors in strength of arms or spirit. Icuri Zarius III was no fool. The present age was different, and different strengths were called for. The great man of this day found his weapons in other men and in the shrewd calculation of events. Zarius now possessed both, his precocious nephew, Confus, and this mad Shrier's holy war. With these two instruments, he would win back the empire.
"What is it you plan, Zarius? You must tell me."
"Painful, isn't it, mother, to stand at the heart of the empire and yet be deaf to its beat, and after a lifetime of playing it like a drum?"
But instead of displaying outrage, her eyes opened in abrupt epiphany.
"The indenture is simply a pretext," she gasped. "Something to protect you from Shrier's censure when you—"
"When I what, mother?" Zarius glanced nervously at the small crowd surrounding them. This was not the place for such a conversation.
"Is this why you sent my grandson to his death?"
she cried. There it was, finally, her true motive for this seditious interrogation. Her beloved grandson, poor sweet Confus, who at this very moment marched somewhere on the Giunati steppe, searching for the dread Skilvendi. This was the Astraea that Zarius knew and despised, devoid of religious sentiment but obsessed with her progeny, with the fate of the House Icuri.
"Confus was to be restorer, wasn't he, mother? You didn't think me capable of such glory, did you, you old bitch?"
"You overreach, Zarius. You grasp for too much."
"Ah, and for a moment I thought you understood."
He had uttered this with offhand certainty, but much of him believed her, enough that sleep now required a full quart of unwatered wine, even more this night, he imagined, after the incident with the birds.
"I understand well enough,"
Astraea snapped.
Your waters aren't so deep that this old woman can't wade in them, Zarius. You hope to extort signatures for your indenture, not because you expect any men of the Tusk to relinquish their conquests, but because you expect to wage war against them afterward. With your indenture, you'll be immune to shrial censure when you subdue the petty, undermanned fiefdoms that are sure to arise in the Holy War's wake. And that is why you've sent Confis on your so-called punitive expedition against the Skilvendi. Your plan requires manpower you do not have, so long as the northern provinces must be guarded.
Dread churned his innards.
Ah, she said wickedly, it's one thing to rehearse your plans in the murk of your soul, and quite another to hear them on the lips of another, isn't it, my foolish boy? Like listening to a mumma parrot your voice. Does it sound foolish to you now, Zarius? Does it sound mad?
No, mother, he managed to say with some semblance of confidence. Merely daring.
Daring?
She cried, as though the word had unlatched something deranged within her.
By the gods, how I wish I'd strangled you in your cradle! Such a foolish son! You've doomed us, Zarius. Can't you see? No one! No High King of Kyrenius, no Aspect Emperor of Kinney, has ever defeated the Skilvendi on their ground. They are the people of war, Zarius. Confus is dead. The flower of your army is dead. Zarius, Zarius, you've brought catastrophe upon us all.
Mother, no. Confus assured me he could do it. He studied the Skilvendi as no other. He knows their weaknesses.
Zarius, poor sweet fool, can't you see that Confis is still a child? Brilliant, fearless, as beautiful as a god, but still a child.
She clutched at her cheeks and began clawing.
You've killed my child,
she wailed. Her logic, or maybe it was her terror, swept through him with the force of a cataract. Panicked, Zarius looked to the others on the balcony, saw his mother's fear on all their faces, and realized that it had been there all along. It wasn't Aikuri Zarius III they feared. It was what he had done. Have I destroyed everything? He stumbled. Bony hands steadied him. Scaeus. Scaeus. He understood what he did. He had glimpsed the glory, the brilliance. He whirled, gripped the old council by his draped robe, and shook him so violently that his brooch, a golden eye with an onyx pupil, snapped and clinked across the ground.
Tell me you see, Zarius cried. Tell me!
Clutching his robe to prevent it from unraveling, the old man kept his eyes dutifully to the ground.
You've made a wager, god of men. Only after the number sticks have been thrown can we know.
Yes, that was it. Only after the number sticks have been thrown. Tears spilled from his eyes. He grasped the old council by the cheeks and was shocked by the coarseness of his skin. His mother had told him nothing new. He'd always known that he'd wagered everything. How many hours had he plotted with Confis? How many times had he been moved to wonder by his nephew's martial brilliance? Never had the Empire possessed an exalt general such as Aikuri Confis. Never. He will overcome the Skilvendi. He'll humble the people of war. And it seemed to Zarius that he knew these things with impossible certainty. My star enters the whore, bound by twin portents to the nail of heaven. A bird shat upon me. He dropped his hands to Scaeus' shoulders, and was struck by the magnanimity of the act. How he must love me. He looked to Gain Kelty, and Garo, and the others, and suddenly the cause of their doubt and fear seemed so very clear to him. He turned to his mother, who had fallen to her knees.
You, all of you, think you see a man who's made a mad wager. But men are frail, mother. Men are fallible.
She stared at him, the lamp black about her eyes muddied by tears.
And are not emperors men, Zarius?
Priests, augurs, and philosophers all teach us that what we see is smoke. The man I am is but smoke, mother. The son you birthed is but my mask, One more guise I've taken for this wearisome revel of blood and semen you call life. I am what you told me I would be. Emperor, divine, not smoke, but fire.
At these words, Gain Kelty fell to his knees. After a moment's hesitation, the others followed. But Estrella clutched her eunuch's arm and pulled herself to her feet, all the while gaping at him.
And if Confis should die in the smoke, Zarius? If the Skilvende should ride from the smoke and put out your fire? What then?
He struggled to contain his outrage.
Your end approaches, and you cling to the smoke because you fear that smoke is all there is. You're afraid, Mother, because you're old, and nothing bewilders so much as fear.
Estrella regarded him imperiously.
My age is my own affair. I've no need of fools to remind me.
No, I suppose your tits scarce let you forget.
Estrella screeched, flew at him as she had in his childhood, but her giant eunuch, Pizathulus, restrained her, catching her with fists that dwarfed her forearms. He bobbed his shaved head in terrified stupefaction.
I should have killed you, she shrieked, strangled you with your own cord.
Unaccountably, Zarius began to laugh, old and frightened. For the first time, she looked pedestrian, far from the indomitable, all-knowing matriarch she had always seemed. His mother looked pathetic. It was almost worth losing an empire.
Take her to her chambers, he said to the giant. See that my physicians tend to her.
Sputtering and shrieking, she was carried bodily from the balcony. The immensity of the Andiamine Heights swallowed her murderous cries. The rich colors of sunset had paled into those of dusk. The sun was half down, framed by a cloudy mantle of purple. For several moments, Zarius simply stood, breathing deeply, wringing his hands to silence the tremors. His people watched him nervously from the corners of their eyes. The herd. At last, Gain Kelty, whose Norserai heritage made him more outspoken than was seemly, broke the silence.
God of men, may I speak?
Zarius waved irritated assent.
The Empress, God of men.
What she said?
Her fears are warranted, Gain Kelty. She simply spoke the truth dwelling in all our hearts.
But she threatened to kill you.
Zarius struck the captain full on the face. The blond man's hands balled into fists for a moment, then unclenched. He glared fiercely at Zarius's feet.
I apologize, God of men. I merely feared for...
For nothing, Zarius said sharply. The Empress grows old, Gain Kelty. The tides have drawn her out of sight of shore. She's simply lost her bearings.
Gain Kelty fell to the ground, placed his lips firmly to Zarius's right knee.
Enough, Zarius said, drawing his captain to his feet. He let his fingertips linger on the gorgeous blue tattoos webbing the man's forearms. His eyes burned, his head ached, but he felt an extraordinary calm. He turned to Scaeus.
Someone brought you a message, old friend. Was it news of Confis? A mad question, but strangely trivial when asked in the absence of breath.
When the council hesitated, the tremors returned.
Please, Sejanus, please.
No, God of men.
Dizzying relief. Zarius almost staggered.
Well then, what was it?
The Phanum have sent an emissary in reply to your request to parley.
Good, good.
But not just any emissary, God of men.
Scaeus licked his thin old man lips.
A Kisharum. The Phanum have sent a Kisharum.
The sun went down, and so it seemed, all hope with it. Like tattered cloth in the wind, the braziers fluttered in the small courtyard Gain Kelty had selected for the meeting. Surrounded by dwarf cherry trees and weeping hollies, Zarius squeezed his coray tight until it felt his knuckles would burst. He probed the gloom of the adjoining porticoes, unconsciously counting his shadowy men. He turned to the lean sorcerer on his right, Kemen Khetri, the Grand Master of his Imperial Sake.
"Do you have enough?"
"More than enough,"
Kemen Khetri replied, his voice indignant.
"Heed your tone, Grand Master,"
Skaos snapped from Zarius's left.
"Our Emperor has asked you a question."
Kemen Khetri bowed his head stiffly as though against his will. Twin fires reflected in his large, wet eyes.
"There are three of us here, God of Men, and 12 crossbowmen, all bearing Kore."
Zarius winced.
"Three? Only you and 2 others remain?"
"It could not be helped, God of Men."
"Of course." Zarius thought of the Kore in his right hand. He could humble the pompous mage with a touch, but then that would leave only 2. How he despised sorcerers. Almost as much as he despised needing them.
"They come,"
Skaos whispered. Zarius clenched his Kore so tight the script engraved across it felt a brand in his palm. 2 Eothic guardsmen entered the courtyard, bearing lamps rather than arms. They took positions on either side of the bronze doors, and Gain Kelty, still dressed in his ceremonial armor, filed between them, accompanied by a cowled figure draped in black linen robes. The captain led the emissary to the designated spot, where the spheres of light cast by the 4 braziers overlapped. Despite the illumination, Zarius could see only portions of the man's lip and left cheek beneath the cowl. Kisharum. For the Nansur, the only name more hateful was Skilvendi. Nansur children, even the children of emperors, were weaned on tales of the heathen sorcerer priests, of their venereal rites and their unfathomable powers. To simply speak the name was to strike terror in the Nansur breast. Zarius struggled to breathe.
"Why send a Kisharum? To kill me?"
The emissary drew back his cowl, pulling it wide over his shoulders. Then he lowered his arms so that the robe fell to the ground, revealing the long saffron cassock he wore beneath. His bald scalp was pale, shockingly so, and his face was dominated by the black sockets beneath his brow. Eyeless faces always unnerved Zarius, always reminded him of the dead skull beneath every man's expression. But the knowledge that this man could nevertheless see awakened a pang at the back of this throat, one that could not be silenced by swallowing. Just as his childhood tutors had claimed, a serpent coiled about the Kisharum's neck, a Shigeki salt asp, black and shining as though oiled, its flickering tongue and surrogate eyes suspended next to the man's right ear. The sightless pits remained fixed upon Zarius, but the asp's head bobbed and turned, slowly scrutinizing the breadth of the courtyard, methodically tasting the air.
"Do you see it, Kemen Khetri?"
Zarius hissed under his breath.
"Do you see the mark of sorcery?"
"None,"
the sorcerer said, his voice tight with the fear of being overheard. The snake's eyes lingered for a moment on the dark porticoes that flanked the courtyard, as though assessing the threat posed by the shadows within. Then, like a tiller swinging on a greased hinge, it turned to Zarius.
"I am Malahet,"
the Kisharum said in flawless Shaiak,
"adopted son of Gizma, of the tribe Indara Kishori."
"You're Malahet,"
Kemen Khetri explained. Another indiscretion. Zarius had not given him leave to speak.
"And you are Kemen Khetri."
The eyeless face bowed, but the snake's head remained rigid.
"Honor to an old foe."
Zarius sensed the Grand Master stiffen next to him.
"Emperor,"
the sorcerer murmured,
"you must leave at once. If this is truly Malahet, then you're in grave danger. We all are."
Malahet. He had heard that name before in one of Skaos's briefings, the one whose arms were scarred like a Skilvendi.
"So, 3 are not enough?"
Zarius replied, inexplicably heartened by his Grand Master's fear.
"Malahet is second only to Siokti in the Kisharum, and only then, because their prophetic law bars non-Kianin from the position of Heresiarch.
Even the Kisharim are fearful of his power. What the Grand Master says is true, God of Men,
Skaos added in low tones.
You must leave at once. Let me negotiate in your stead.
But Sarius ignored them. How could they be so hare-hearted when the gods themselves had secured these proceedings?
Well met, Malahet, he said, surprised by the steadiness of his voice.
After a brief pause, Gainkelty barked.
You stand in the presence of Ikuri Zarius III, the Emperor of Nansur. You will kneel, Malahet.
The Kisharim wagged a finger, and the asp swayed with it as though in mockery.
Fainam kneel only before the one, before the god that is solitary.
Out of reflex or simple ignorance, Gainkelty raised a fist to strike the man. Zarius stilled him with an outstretched palm.
We shall rescind protocol for this occasion, Captain, he said. The heathens shall kneel before me soon enough.
He cupped the fist holding the koray in his other hand, driven by an obscure impulse to conceal it from the serpent's eyes.
You've come to parley?
He asked the Kisharim.
No.
Kemen Ketri muttered a soldier's curse.
Then why have you come?
Zarius asked.
I have come, Emperor, so you might parley with another.
Zarius blinked. Who? For a moment, it seemed the nail of heaven flashed from the Kisharim's brow. There was a shout from the blackness of the porticos, and Zarius raised his hands before him. Kemen Ketri intoned something incomprehensible, dizzyingly so. A globe, composed only of ghostly trails of blue fire, leapt about them. But nothing had happened. The Kisharim stood as motionless as before. The asp's eyes glowed like amber coals in the firelight. Then Skaos gasped,
His face!
Superimposed like a transparent mask over Malahet's skull-like visage was the face of another, a grizzled Kianine warrior who still bore the desert's mark on his hawkish features. Appraising eyes peered from the Kisharim's empty sockets, and a phantom goatee hung from his chin, braided in the manner of a Kianine grandee.
Skaos,
Zarius said. He had never seen the man before, but somehow he knew he looked upon the Sapatashah governor of Shigek, the heathen scoundrel whom the southern columns had fenced with for more than four decades. The ghostly lips moved, but all Zarius heard was a far-off voice speaking in the lolling rhythms of Kiani. Then the real lips moved beneath, saying,
Excellent guess, Ikuri. You, I know by your coins.
So, what is this?
The Padaraja sends one of his Apatashah dogs to confer with me?
Again, the alarming lag of lips and voices.
You're not worthy of the Padaraja, Ikuri. I alone could break your empire over my knee. Be thankful the Padaraja is a pious man and abides by his treaties.
All our treaties are moot, Skaos, now that Mathanet is Shrya.
Even more reason for the Padaraja to spurn you. You, too, have become moot.
Skaos leaned and whispered in his ear,
Ask him why the theatrics if you've become irrelevant. The heathen are afraid, God of Men. That's the only reason they come to you thus.
Zarius smiled, convinced his old counsel had merely confirmed what he already knew.
If I've become moot, then why these extraordinary measures, Why make your better your messenger?
Because of the holy war that you and your idolatrous brethren would wage against us, why else?
And because you know the holy war is my instrument.
The wraith-like expression smiled, and Zarius heard distant laughter.
You would wrest the holy war from Mathanet, would you? Make it the great lever you'd use to undo centuries of defeat? We know of your petty schemes to bind the idolaters to your indenture. And we know of the army you've sent against the Skilvendi. The ploys of a fool. All of them.
Confis has promised to pike a road of Skilvendi heads from the steppe to my feet.
Confis is doomed. No one possesses cunning or might enough to overcome the Skilvendi.
not even your nephew. Your army and your heir are dead, Emperor. Carrion, if so many in Rithi did not muster on your shores, I would ride to you even now and bid you drink of my sword.
Zarius clutched his core tighter to silence the tremors. An image of Confis bleeding at the feet of some wild Skilvendi reaver flashed before his soul's eye, and he relished it, despite the horror of its implications. Then Mother would have only me. Again, Skaeus's voice in his ear.
He lies to frighten you. We heard from Confis just this morn, and nothing was amiss. Remember, God of Men, the Skilvendi crushed the Kiani not 8 years past. Scorus lost 3 sons in that expedition, including Haz Jeannette, his eldest. Goad him, Zarius, goad him. Angry men make mistakes.
But of course he'd already considered this.
You flatter yourself, Scorus, if you think Confis is as foolish as Haz Jeannette.
Ethereal eyes blinked over empty sockets.
The Battle of Zerkerta was a great woe for us, yes, but a woe you will share very shortly. You attempt to injure me, Icuri, but you merely prophesy your own destruction.
The Nansorium, Zarius said, has endured far greater losses and survived.
But Confis can't lose. The omens.
Well enough, Icuri. I'll grant you that trifle. The solitary god knows you, Nansor, are a stubborn people. I'll even grant that Confis may prosper where my own son faltered. I'll not underestimate that snake charmer. He was my hostage for 4 years, remember? But none of this makes Mathanet's holy war your instrument. You hold no hammer above us.
But I do, Scorus. The men of the Tusk know nothing of your people, even less than Mathanet. Once they understand, they war not only against you, but against your Kisharum. The leaders of the Holy War will sign my indenture. The Holy War requires a school, and that school happens to be mine.
The disembodied lips grinned over the dour line of Malahet's mouth. Again, the uncanny, faraway voice.
Hesha, Ejor Usaika. Matanate Jeskutika.
What, the Imperial sake? You think your Shraya would cede you the Holy War for the Imperial sake? Mathanet has plucked your eyes from the 1,000 temples, hasn't he? Do you see, Icuri? Do you finally see how quick the sands run beneath your feet?
What do you mean?
Even we know more of your accursed Shraya's plans than you.
Zarius glanced at Skaeus's face, saw concern rather than calculation furrow his crinkled features. What was happening?
Skaeus, tell me what to say. What does he mean?
Speechless, Icuri? Malahet's surrogate voice sneered. Well, choke on this. Mathanet has sealed a pact with the Scarlet Spires. Even now the Scarlet Magi prepare to join the Holy War. Mathanet already possesses his school, one that dwarfs your imperial sake in both number and power. As I said, you are moot.
Impossible,
Skaeus spat. Zarius whirled to face the old council, stunned by his audacity.
What's this now, Icuri? You let your dogs howl at your table?
Zarius knew he should be outraged, but such an outburst from Skaeus was unprecedented.
But he lies, God of Men,
Skaeus cried.
This is a heathen trick, meant to extort concessions. Why would they lie?
Kemen Ketri snapped, obviously eager to humiliate an old court foe.
Don't you think the heathen want us to possess the Holy War? Or do you think they'd rather treat with Mathanet?
Had they forgotten the presence of their emperor? They spoke as though he were a fiction whose usefulness had come to an end.
They think me irrelevant?
No, Skaeus retorted. They know the Holy War's ours, but would have us think it's not.
A cold fury uncoiled within Zarius. There would be much screaming tonight.
Either the two men remembered themselves, or they sensed something of Zarius's humor, because they abruptly fell silent. 2 years passed. Azayumi had entertained Zarius's court with trained tigers. Afterward, Zarius had asked him how he could command such fierce beasts with looks alone. "Because," the towering black-skinned man had said, "they see their future in my eyes."
"You must forgive my zealous servants," Zarius said to the wraith inhabiting the Kisharim's face. "You can be assured that I will not."
Scaurus's visage flickered, then reappeared, as though nodding in and out of some unseen shaft of light. How the old wolf must be laughing. Zarius could almost see him regaling the Pariraja with descriptions of the disarray in the imperial court.
"I shall mourn them, then," the Sapatisha said.
"Save your dirges for your own folk, heathen. Regardless of who possesses the holy war, you are doomed." The Fainim were doomed. Outrageous insolence aside, what Kemen Khetri had said moments earlier was true. The Pariraja wanted him to possess the holy war. One could not bargain with fanatics.
"Ah, strong words. At last I speak to an emperor of the Nansur. Tell me then, Ikuri Zarius III, now that you understand we both bargain from a position of weakness, what do you propose?"
Zarius paused, possessed by a calculating cold. He had always been at his canny best when wroth. Alternatives tumbled through his soul, most of them foundering on the sharp fact of Mathanet and his demonic cunning. He thought of Kalmamunis and his hatred of his cousin, Nersei Proyas, heir to the throne of Kunraya. And then he understood.
"To the men of the Tusk, you and your people are little more than sacrificial victims, Sapatasha. They speak and act as though their triumph is already inked in scripture. Perhaps the time will come when they respect you as we do."
"Shrai Laksaraka."
"You mean fear." Everything now hinged on his nephew, far to the north. More than ever.
"The omens."
"As I said, respect."